Okay, this evening I have a request to give a talk on a particular subject. I'm sure I've given a talk on this before, but it's a very easy subject. It's a subject on the meaning of life. In particular, I'm going to focus on basically the answer and then work backwards from there. Because as far as I'm concerned, a lovely way of describing the meaning of life is actually to find this thing which we call peace of mind. So instead of actually calling the talk the meaning of life, it's going to be more about peace of mind. Because that is something which everyone really aspires to, even much more so than wealth or fame or love or whatever. To find that peace of mind, wherever you are and whatever's happening, is almost like the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow. The thing which many people aspire towards, even though that maybe in some parts of your life, we feel that we are aspiring for something else. But really what we truly want, the purpose of our life, is to somehow, somewhere, in some way, find this elusive thing called peace of mind. The times when you have been the happiest, I like to ask people to reflect upon those. So far in your life, the times of the most greatest happiness or contentment, you'll probably find that those were times when you experienced this amazing thing which we call peace of mind. But those times when you have had that wonderful experience of peace of mind, the first thing I'm going to ask you was everything so perfect? And usually you find, no, it wasn't so perfect. It was as if that we could find peace of mind, even though what was surrounding us was not so perfect. It's as if we find peace of mind in spite of the difficulties and problems and imperfections of life. And that's one of my first important points. Never think that you can find peace of mind after you've finished all your business, after you've fixed up all your problems, after you've retired from work, because by that time you're too old anyway. And you've got other problems when you retire. Sometimes we always think that later on I can find my peace of mind, my happiness, my freedom, what I've always been looking for. But the first thing to know is that you can only find this great thing called peace of mind, your meaning in life, in the beautiful imperfection of life. And what do we mean by learning how to be at peace in our mind, even though everything is so imperfect? And the reason is, you know, that this is the nature of our world. And a lot of times, as I've said here before, if there's something to do, we do it. If there's nothing to do, we make peace and leave it alone. And you should know by now that so much of the things you've worried about, you've strived and struggled with, have you really made them better or have you made it worse? So much of our struggle and striving was counterproductive, and sometimes one of the best things you can do is just make peace with things. You make peace of mind in imperfection. A good example to be topical. How many of you were at peace with the weather today? Or how many think, oh, it's so hot, it's too hot. Every time you thought it's too hot, why is it too hot? Did that make it cooler or hotter for you? And of course it makes it hotter for you. Every time you complain, it makes it hotter. So instead of complaining, and people have actually told me this, I read this somewhere, on days like today, people actually call up the weather bureau. You can find their number in the telephone directory and complain. You're supposed to be the weather bureau. Why do you make it so hot today? Of course, it's not their fault. It's no one's fault. So who can you complain to anyway? No one. We know we can't complain about the weather. So can you complain about other things in life? How many of you complain about the government? Now, come on. We just had a change of government in Western Australia. Hasn't it dawned on you yet they're all the same, with minor differences. But really, that's what the government is like. So it's just, this is just the life in which we have to live. So the only way we can find a bit of peace and mind is not trying to make everything so perfect and so nice. It's understanding that peace of mind comes from another thing, a sense of accepting, and understanding you can bear with these things. You've been in hotter days like this. You've been in more difficult times than this. We've all gone through those ups and downs of life, but you all remember that the ups of life are always followed by the downs. And no matter how down it goes, it has to come up again afterwards. This is a yo-yo world, and sometimes when it's down, we forget it's going to go up. But more importantly, when it's up, we forget it's going to go down. And if we understand just this is the nature of life, we understand the nature of life, then we can make peace with her. It's only when we don't understand, when we think that somehow or other we can make it different, if we struggle, if we strive, and if we really give those people in the Weather Bureau peace of mind, not peace of mind, but a peace of our mind, then tell them off, and somehow or another they can get their act together and just make things more comfortable. But we understand that we can't control this world. We can't control this world and change it to be the way we'd like it to be. And anyway, if we did change it to the way we would like it to be, what about other people, the way they would like it to be? In the end, we'd have to have a committee and make a committee decision on what temperature we would like today. Of course, that's just more suffering, as anybody who's been on a committee knows. So instead of doing that, so we have to learn how to make peace with things, even in imperfection. And it's a wonderful thing, if you can't change things, you can make peace with them. Another thing you can't change, which people also creates a lot of problems in life, which stops you having peace of mind, what's the most obvious thing you cannot change? The past. It's already finished. It's gone. It's done with. But still people keep lingering over the past and worrying about the past and feeling so guilty about the past or so angry about the past. The only difference between guilt and anger is anger is at somebody else. Guilt is anger towards yourself. That's all it really is. And also like grief as well, anger about the past or what's happened to you. And all of these things, we know we can't change these things. It's fixed, it's gone. So instead of getting angry about these things, we can make peace with our past. And how do you make peace with your past when there's so much unfinished business to be done? We make it finished. There is one of my favorite stories, and this story is in Opening the Door of Your Heart, which is on sale in our library at a very reasonable price. And that is a wonderful story of this monk who was building his main hall in his monastery. And of course it takes a lot of time and effort to make a big building like that. But it got to the time of the rainy season, the monsoon season. And in Thailand, as in most Buddhist countries, when it comes to the wet season, all the monks go on retreat. We have a 3-month retreat period. And so the abbot of this monastery told the builders, look, we're all going to be meditating for the next 3 months. And anyway, it's going to be raining. It's not the best time to build anyway. All the builders, you can go home and come back in 3 months. So he sent all the builders away. So a few days later, a visitor came to the temple and they saw this hall incomplete. And so just in general conversation with the abbot, they asked, when is your hall going to be finished? And the abbot replied, it is finished. To which the visitor was quite stunned and said, what do you mean? It's finished. There's not a roof on it. Are you going to leave it like that? There's no glass in the windows. There's pieces of wood and old cement bags all over the floor. What do you mean it's finished? To which the abbot replied his immortal words, sir, what's done is finished. And after that, the abbot got up and went to meditate. What a beautiful response that was. What's done is finished. That way, you can actually find a bit of peace in life. Because if you want all your halls to be finished, if you want all your jobs and the house to be complete, if you want all your letters and emails to be replied to before you stop and give yourself a bit of peace of mind, you will never find peace of mind, because there's always more things to be done. Isn't that the case, as I've often said? The only place in our modern societies you find people resting in peace is where? In the cemeteries, when it's too late to enjoy it. So I say, RIP, now, while you can enjoy it. So making that observation, the only time you can find some peace is actually to realize what's done is finished, the past is gone, let it go. Sometimes people think, oh no, it's important to remember the past. And because you keep on carrying around that past, you will never find any peace of mind. Sometimes people really think that they should make amends for all the terrible things they've done. I haven't seen this because I don't watch TV, but apparently there was a TV show called something about Earl, or I'm called Earl or something. And the TV show was about this fellow who, he must have become a Buddhist or something, because he had all this idea of karma. He'd done all these terrible things in his life, and he was apparently going around trying to mend his bad karma by trying to sort of find out all these people and just do the right thing by them. I'm not sure. Is that the right name of it? I'm called Earl or something? My name is Earl. Okay. I think some of you may have seen that TV show. And is that what you have to do to find some peace? To right all those wrongs you've done in the past? And of course, sometimes it's endless, which is probably why that show is having many, many reruns. And of course, you don't have to do that to fix up all of the past. It's only when we are burdened with the past, we think that we have to pay off all those debts, rather than just writing a line underneath them and letting them all go. What a wonderful thing it would be to be able to do that. And why not? You know what that's called? It's called forgiveness. One of the great things about spirituality, well, the sign that you're actually in a place which is teaching true spirituality, and I don't know, care what it's called, Buddhism, Christianity, Islam, or whatever, real spirituality can be measured by how much it can forgive and how it encourages forgiveness and letting go of the past. I was once asked in Singapore, how many times should you forgive? And I replied, always one more time. Which means forever. So it's a beautiful thing to be able to do. Now, of course, you can forgive other people. Well, some of you can. Sometimes you think there's some things a person has done they don't deserve forgiveness. What's the opposite of forgiveness? Revenge. There's only those two. You either forgive or you want revenge. You want to hurt them. You want to give them a lesson. Make them pay. That word which I said, how many times should you forgive? Always one more time. Was a quote which people put in a calendar. And because I was giving all these quotes, they asked for some more quotes. And I said about forgiveness, always one more time. The quote which never got in the calendar, and I don't know why, it was one of my best quotes, which I'm most happy about, is, you don't need to seek revenge, because karma will get the bastards anyway. I don't know why they didn't like that. Because I'm using the vernacular, and you all use that word at home, but it means that people remember it. So why do you need to seek revenge? That seeking revenge doesn't help the other person. And actually, It cripples your happiness. You never find peace of mind when you want revenge for whoever has hurt you and harmed you. And the wonderful thing is that you can forgive. It's allowable to forgive. You are praised for forgiveness, and you grow through forgiveness. It's a wonderful thing to be encouraged. It's as if spirituality, in the spiritual way of things, the more that you can forgive, the richer and more you're respected. The richer you are and the more you're respected, the more you can have forgiveness. And you all know that because forgiveness is one of the most beautiful things you could ever see. And there are many, many acts of forgiveness. I've told many stories of forgiveness. You may have your own wonderful stories of forgiveness. But those acts of forgiveness, oh, what's that? I'm sure you must have heard this maybe about 2 weeks ago. I don't know the last time I told a story about that, the Truth and Reconciliation Commission in South Africa, just after apartheid was dismantled. And Nelson Mandela was made the president of that country. And instead of seeking revenge, instead of punishing all those people who punished him, he, with Desmond Tutu, established the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, a brilliant way of dealing with the past. At this commission, anybody who had done what would be a crime was able to go to this commission and in front of everybody else to confess honestly what they'd done. And as long as they truthfully said the horrendous thing which they did, they would be given amnesty. It was just being honest, admitting, and they would be forgiven. And that's exactly just what I learnt in Buddhism so many years ago, which these days, you know, so people can remember these things, I've called the AFL code, you know, which many of you know, the acknowledge, forgive, and learn. Acknowledge, forgive, and learn from it. That's all one needs to do. That's basic Buddha's teachings. Call it AFL because, you know, that's the Australian Football League. People can remember those words. AFL, acknowledge, forgive, learn. And that's exactly what they were doing in this Truth and Reconciliation Commission. Acknowledging what they'd done in public. Amnesty was forgiveness, so everyone could learn from that. And one of the most moving events, it was most moving but typical of many things which happened in that Truth and Reconciliation Commission, was when one of the South African policemen was recounting how he tortured and killed a black African activist, an activist from the ANC, in front of the man's widow. You can imagine this scene. There was a woman whose husband had disappeared probably in the middle of the night, and she suspected what might have happened, but never knew the true story. And now she was facing the man who was confessing in detail how he tortured and killed the husband of this woman, the father of her children, the one she loved. And apparently, if I remember accurately, this police officer, this white police officer, was shaking, trembling, as he recounted the details of what happened, facing the wife of the man he'd murdered. And at the end of his testimony, shaking, the wife rose from her seat and went for him. The guards were supposed to stop her, but they froze. She went for him, the murderer of her husband, and put her big black arms around him, hugged him, and said, "I forgive you." Not just those two people, but apparently the whole room wept. These are sort of beautiful acts. If you want to know what religion is, or should be, that's encapsulated in that moment. A black woman, a white man, hugging the murderer and one of the victims, the murdered's wife, saying, "I forgive you." It's beautiful. And how much people would move on and become better people, learn from that terrible act, never do it again, but not just not do those things again. To learn real compassion, real wisdom, and real way of moving forward. Already just that particular example moved me to actually to try and move you. If a woman could forgive the murderer of the man she loved, can't you forgive far, far lesser crimes? Shows it can be done, and how beautiful it is to be done. And why shouldn't it be done? Let's do it. Because when we have such great forgiveness, we are actually letting go of the past. The whole business is being settled. Imagine just how much thinking, how much action, how much worry, how much planning, just how many headaches, how much space it takes up in your mind and in your life when you think you have to seek revenge. But as soon as you say, I forgive, the matter is dropped and it's no more business for you. You literally can be free from that terrible thing of the past which just eats you up, which does create the cancers and the sicknesses. You're free of that, and you can move on at peace with your life, because you've become at peace with your past. Beautiful act, and I mention that often because you may be able to forgive other people which have hurt you. You don't need to keep carrying it and carrying it and carrying it around so long. It's a time to let it go. Otherwise, where else can you find peace of mind? What's done is finished, said that great monk. Therefore, he could go and meditate at peace without worrying about the unfinished hall. And even the stuff which you have done, all this guilty stuff which you feel terrible about. One of my favorite stories, which isn't in the book, but I've said here many times, I don't really feel guilty about this, even though I broke a promise to a lady by telling you this. Part of my job, we do counseling and talk to people, and this particular woman was dying, again, of cancer. So she came, and I was talking to her most Friday evenings. And then she decided she really wanted to have like a bit longer time and having a bit of a heart-to-heart. And part of this, because I knew that she was about to die soon, I wanted her to become free from her past so she could die well. So I asked her, in confidence, what's the worst thing you've ever done? What's that act which you've hidden from other people, which you might carry to your grave and feel terrible about? And can you tell me? It's obviously after many weeks of getting to know her, she could actually trust me. And she said to me, said the worst thing, it took a while to get it out of her, the worst thing she'd ever done was that she'd kissed another man while she was married, well, not her husband. And I said, that's the worst thing you've ever done. Yeah, I never told my husband this, but I kissed another man. So if that's the worst thing you've done, you've done a pretty good life as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure as many of you have done much worse than that. But what really struck me for her, there was such a release, actually, to tell someone this thing which was eating her up inside. But not only just to tell someone, the very fact that she told me and saw my reaction, she realized for the first time it wasn't that bad. But when you keep it to yourself, these small little things which you've done, you make them to be huge things, as if you're going to go to hell for this, as if you're going to be punished for eternity for kissing another man when you're married to a girl or whatever. No, she was married to a boy, that's right. It's hot weather. My brain doesn't work. But I forgive myself that. So that when actually you acknowledge it, and actually, many of these things which you feel so guilty about, especially if you tell it to a good friend, and you find out it's not such a big deal anyway. And you can let it go. She could actually let that go now, so she didn't feel so guilty when she died. Sometimes you need to acknowledge it first of all, and then forgive what you've done in the past. And one of the nice things about being like a monk for so many years, and many people have told me their secrets, and it was interesting experience when I first started this sort of job. And if any of you are counselors here, you know, you probably have the same experience which I had. It's classic counselor's experience. And first time someone opens up to you, you hear that, oh, that's really interesting. And the next person who opens up to you, I've heard this before. And the next one who comes to you, here we go again. People think that, you know, that they're so sort of individual and their sort of, you know, wrong actions that no one else has done those. As if, you know, that somehow that, you know, that your actions are just the worst in the whole world. But whenever actually people actually open up, you know, you're all pretty much the same. So the worst things which you have done, you know, probably pretty much the same as the person sitting next to you. Maybe different in slight details, small variations, but pretty much the same. Because we're human beings. That's all. And so when we accept our humanity, and we don't demand perfection, we can be at peace with ourselves, with the imperfection of our past. We can actually let it go. We don't need to mend it, to change it, to fix it. Now, we're such great fixers in life. We want to fix up the problems. And there's no end of problems. That's why we say we're in a fix. We're always trying to fix things. We don't fix things, we let them go. We leave them alone. The past is finished. We'll never find peace of mind until we get to this stage of forgiveness and also forgiveness of ourselves, letting go of guilt. That's number one, those two. Sometimes again people ask, how do you forgive yourself and others? And of course, the way to forgiveness is to realize that you're worth forgiving and the other person is worth forgiving. I always say that's the step number one, to let go of the past through forgiveness. To realize that that person and yourself are worth it. Sometimes it's so hard when we see someone, say, who's that woman seeing the murder of her husband. How can you forgive that? To see that that human being, she saw him just weeping, or shaking with fear, he was feeling so bad about that. She saw something in that policeman who killed her husband, something she could respect, something worth saving. So she forgave. And that beautiful thing inside that murderer policeman grew. That's why you've heard me say here before, there is no such thing as a murderer. It's a person who's murdered. There is no such thing as a thief. There's a person who stole. There is no such thing as a cheat. There's a person who's cheated. If you understand that, you understand why forgiveness is possible. Because there's something more than that act which you're so upset about. In the same way with you, no matter what you've done, which you feel guilty for, there's something more inside of you than those one or two, three, four, I don't know how many acts which you may feel terrible about. Let's get specific. I don't know how many girls in here have had an abortion. Have you forgiven that yet? Or do you still carry that around inside of you, thinking, what a terrible thing I've done. Oh, I'm evil. I'm going to have to pay for this. Oh, please. You know, hopefully, in spiritual religion like Buddhism, you are forgiven. You don't go to hell for these things. We don't have going to hell for anything. If you go to hell, you send yourself down there. It's your fault, not sort of anybody else. You're completely free. Hell is a place with an open door. You send yourself there because of guilt. You can walk out any time if you understand what love and forgiveness is. So those people who have had abortions, sometimes our society makes you afraid, say it's a bad thing to do. And some religions, which I really don't sort of agree with, those are the religions which condemn people for doing those things. And you may notice that the people who condemn you are all men, who've never been pregnant and don't know what it's all about. They've got no right to even have an opinion about this, because they don't know what they're talking about, literally. But what we really should be doing is forgiving, accepting, understanding, being with a person who makes such a difficult decision. There should be no guilt, no fear, no sort of idea of revenge. It's one of the toughest decisions any girl has to make.
The job of any friend, any spiritual leader, is literally just to be with them and to help them through whatever way they decide. To be kind, to allow them to move on and to let go of that past. What's done is finished. Can we forgive? If you do ever feel guilty about that, you know why? It's because we focus on that one act, that I'm an abortionist. Rather, I'm a girl who's done one thing. What else have you done in that day, in that week, in that year, in that life? Please keep it in proportion. You're worth forgiving. You're much more than that. And even if it's a bad act at all, because I can't judge that. I'm a man, I'm a monk, I've never been pregnant, so what would I know? But what I do know is forgiveness is the most important part. We can let it go. And this is just an example. If we can't let go of that, well, first of all, we let go because we know we're worth letting go. And the other person we want to sort of have revenge for, we get angry at, they're worth forgiving. Try it out. Because when it's they're worth it, that person is worth it, you're worth it, it's also a worthy thing to do. In other words, it doesn't make the matter worse, it actually makes the future better through forgiveness. So it's worth, the person's worth forgiving, and also it's a worthy thing to do to create a more peaceful, happy future for everybody. Punishment never really works. Again, every time I was punished as a kid, all I ever learned from those punishments was to try and not get caught next time. Just made me more sneaky, more clever, not to get caught. That's all it means. Every time that you've been punished with a speeding fine, does that stop you speeding? Or just to be a bit more careful so you know where the speed cameras are next time, so you don't get caught? A lot of people are like that, aren't they? So instead of sort of worrying about this punishment business, we want something else to actually inspire us and make us better people. And forgiveness is a wonderful way forward. So to have some peace of mind, we can let go of the past. Forgiveness, letting go, because you're worth it, and it's a worthwhile thing to do. Straight away, you'll have a huge amount of peace. But the next thing which worries us is what's going to happen in the future. How can you have peace of mind when we've got global warming, we've got credit crunch, we've got, what else is happening these days? There's wars, there's AIDS, there's cancers, there's, I don't know what else happening. But anyway, why do we worry about these things? If you can do something about it, it's worthwhile worrying about it. If you can't do anything, why worry? The main thing which overcomes the worry about the future, you can have peace of mind, is understanding that now is where your future is made. And every time you worry about the future, you, because you're worrying right now, you are creating the causes for a bad future for yourself. Now is where the future is made. Now is the only time you can do anything. Now is where you can actually act. So what are you doing in this present moment? Worrying is just making things much worse. So instead of worrying about things, make peace in this present moment. Be kind in this present moment. See if you can do something in this present moment. At least that way, you are doing the very, very best to create a positive future for yourself and others. Every time you worry about the future, you are actually neglecting the future. Every time you think about the future, what you're going to do tomorrow, next week, how's it going to work out, it means you're not acting right now to do something about the future, now. So what's the most wonderful thing you can do about the future is to make peace, be kind, be gentle, right now. You can always do that, and you are making these beautiful causes for a wonderful future for yourself and others. Now is where you make the future. So every time we worry about these things, we're actually neglecting the future. And also, sometimes we worry about these things, but we don't know what's going to happen. No one can predict the future. Understanding that the future is totally uncertain is why worry about it. One of my classic stories, Well, I was a school kid. Maybe I actually learned this a long time ago. I don't worry too much about the future. A long time ago, when I was a kid, I had bad teeth, and I had to go to the dentist. And I was telling my mum, "Mummy, don't send me to the dentist." I had an appointment the following morning. And Mummy said, "You've got to go to the dentist, darling." And I said, I tried to use psychology. I was pretty smart, even as about a seven-year-old. "Mummy, you don't love me. You're sending me to the torturer." I said, "I do love you. You've got to go." And every trick I tried didn't work. So I went to bed that night thinking, "I've got to go to the dentist." And I didn't sleep well that night because I was worried. It's only a little fella. You don't like going to the dentist. It's not like these days. The drills were sharper, or probably blunter. They used to hurt much more. So, following morning, I had to try again. "Mummy, don't send me to the dentist." And she was dragging me to the dentist, screaming and crying. I hated going to the dentist. I was very upset at my mum for taking me there. But when I got to the dentist surgery, that's when I found my appointment had been cancelled. All that worry, all that crying, and it never happened. That's probably one of the very important experiences in my youth, when I learned, why worry about a future you don't know is going to happen? Because something which you have experienced already in life, and you've worried about things and it hasn't happened. You've been confident about things and it's all gone wrong. This is what happens in life. It's completely unpredictable. So why worry about it? Understanding that means you can learn how to have peace of mind in this present moment, even though all these other things are going wrong. I think I told recently about the story of one of the stories in the book about the man in the British soldier in the Burmese jungle. But there's another story which is similar to that in my book about the man who's being chased by the tiger. And this is another classic Buddhist story. That once there was a man being chased by the tiger in a jungle. And the tiger had almost caught him. And he was desperate because tigers eat people and they can run much faster than any man can. But he spied in the jungle an old well. And he managed just to jump into that well just before the tiger could catch him. But as soon as he committed himself to jumping in, he realized he'd made a big mistake. Because that well was dry. And at the bottom of that well, he saw a big black snake. And instinctively, he reached out to the side of the well and grabbed on to a tree root, which was pushing through the wall of the well. He grabbed onto that and it stopped his fall. And when he came to his senses, he looked down. The snake had been woken up and had lifted its head and opened its hood. It was trying to strike him at his feet. But his feet were just too high. And the snake couldn't quite reach him. So he looked up to see what happened to the tiger. The tiger hadn't given up yet. The tiger was leaning over into the well with his paws, trying to paw him. But his hand was just too low, and the snake couldn't quite reach him. So there he was, a snake underneath trying to bite him on his feet, a tiger above him trying to claw him, and wonder what's going to happen next. He noticed out of a hole in the side of the well, two mice came out, a black mouse and a white mouse, and they started chewing at his root, making it thinner and thinner and thinner. So it wasn't going to last very long. So, as this all was happening, because the tiger was trying to paw him, and as he was pawing him, he was actually, his backside was rubbing against a tree, making it shake. On a branch of that tree, right above the well, was a bee's nest. The bees were okay, but the honey started to drip out of that bee's nest. Right down into the well. And he could manage to put his tongue out and taste the honey. Oh, it was so delicious. And that's the end of the story.
was a beautiful story, because does life have such neat endings? That's what life is like, isn't it? You know, we've got environmental catastrophe above us and credit crunch below us. We're really in a mess. And so the black and white mice, that's night and day, chewing at our precarious hold on life. That's the cancer and the other stuff which we've got in our bodies. So credit crunch below us, environmental catastrophe, climate change above us, and we got cancer at the same time, eating at our life. So what do we do? You know, there's always honey dripping down. This is so delicious. Now, if you know the meaning of that story, you know how to have peace of mind. To be able to enjoy the honey, which is always there to be tasted, even though you've got a snake below you and a tiger above you, and you're not going to live very long. Understanding that that's possible, you let go of the past, you let go of the future. The future is uncertain. Traditionally, that's how the story ended, which is why I like it, because life is always incomplete. But, being Ajahn Brahm, I added my own ending to that story, which is very plausible. This could have happened. Because I know that sometimes the tigers leaning over, sometimes you do lean over a little bit too far, which the tiger did, and he fell into the well. Fortunately, he missed the man, but fell on top of the snake, crushed the snake to death, and broke its own neck. So there you go. The man could actually climb out of the well at his leisure and go off. Sometimes that can happen, and sometimes things like that do happen. We think the worst is going to happen, terrible things are going to go on, and there's a solution which we never anticipated, comes along, and all our problems are fixed, until we fall into another well or get chased by another tiger. But at least, there are many, many moments where we could be enjoying the honey, and because we are worried, anxious, afraid, we never enjoy the honey which comes to us, which is why we never have peace of mind. You can't find peace of mind anywhere else except halfway down a well between a tiger and a snake. That's where you find peace of mind, because that's your life. When you understand that, why do you get peace of mind? We don't know what's going to happen next. The past we can let go of. We don't need to go and think in all these negative ways. We can enjoy these moments. We can have peace of mind within the imperfections and uncertainties of life. And you don't need to be perfect to have peace of mind. This again is a big mistake of human beings. We want to have safety, security, we want to have everything just right before we can have peace of mind. It just don't never work. So have peace of mind now. It's a hot day today. Fine, you can at least make peace of mind with it. There's lots of honey happened today, lots of joyful experiences. But if people are complaining, oh, it's too hot, oh, it's hot, oh, I don't want it to be hot, then you can't enjoy the honey of today. Or when it's too cold, it's too cold. Or when it's, I don't know what else is happening, you've got a tummy ache, or you've got sort of a headache, or you've got some other ache. There's always some ache going on. So instead of that, you can have peace of mind, even if you are sick. Oh, what a wonderful thing that is to know. You don't have to be healthy to have peace. It'd be a terrible thing, because we're always, you know, sick sometimes. So it doesn't matter what's happening. You can always make peace with things, and you can have peace of mind. And even when you're dying, why not have peace of mind when you're dying? Isn't it wonderful? I'm now dying. I'm out of here. No more worries about tax, global warming, or anything else. You're free. You're out of here soon. So you can have peace of mind even when you're dying. And thing is, though, you don't know if you're going to die or not. That was Ajahn Chah's great teaching. When I was sick in hospital, he came to visit me. He gave me one of those great teachings, just one-liners. But you keep on remembering this for the rest of your life. Once you get some wisdom, it sticks with you. He told me, Brahma Wangso, you're either going to get better or you're going to die. Now, that really hurt at first, because that wasn't what I expected. That wasn't like the usual bedside manner of your best friend. But it was so wonderful. After you started thinking about this, it means, you know, the sickness isn't going to last. Oh, that's such a relief. going to get better or you're going to die. What's the problem? So understanding that, you can make peace no matter what's happening. It's great. You don't know which one it's going to be because the future is really uncertain. Sometimes people, they go in hospital with a toothache and they die. Sometimes they've got, you know, incurable cancer, 3 days to live, and they're still alive 20 years later. So it's totally uncertain. So understand that you don't have to worry about anything. You don't know what's going to happen next. So it means you can be at peace no matter what's happening in life. And fortunately, you've seen people like this. You know, people who, you know, you look at them and they're sick, they're sort of dying, they're supposed to be in agony, but they end up sort of telling jokes. They're happy, they're peaceful people. Actually, I'll tell my joke this evening because I'll do it now. It's actually how to be peace. Because, you know, sometimes those dogs bark. And it's just what dogs do. You've got to let that, because sometimes even like noise makes people upset. And so this is a little joke about that. This is a courtesy of Gus, who's not here, who came to my monastery a few days ago. I told him I would acknowledge the source of this joke. It's a story about Brown Paper Bob. This fellow, many years ago, in the United States, in the Wild West, he rode his horse into town. And he looked at this town, and it was deserted. There was no one there. It was like a ghost town. And so he wondered what was going on. He managed to see this old man outside the saloon and said, "Where is everybody?" And he said, "Oh, they've gone to the hanging of Brown Paper Bob." And this visitor said, "Why did anyone call themselves Brown Paper Bob?" He said, "Oh, he's a bit of an eccentric Brown Paper Bob. Instead of having a proper cowboy hat, he puts a brown paper bag on his head. He doesn't have a shirt and a jacket. He has a big brown paper bag. It cuts a hole in one side, a hole in the other side. He puts his arms through that. Not even any trousers. You guessed it, another brown paper bag. He does wear proper cowboy boots, but everything else is brown paper." I said, "Well, what are you hanging him for?" "Oh, for rustling." It's a family joke. Very easy. So let's get back to making peace of mind. See, even if you get a bad joke, you can still make peace with it. It's just, you know, it's just Ajahn Brahm. You should expect that, those of you who've been here for many years. So after a while, we can find peace in even imperfect jokes and other imperfection in life. The important thing is to understand that the imperfections of life, the imperfections of you, the imperfections of everybody else, this is what life actually is. We can always make peace with it and accept and enjoy the honey which is there from time to time. When we understand that, we can understand how to make peace of mind. But before we run out of time, peace of mind doesn't mean you just sit there and do nothing. Sometimes you even make peace with whatever you have to do in life, with your duties and responsibilities. And I sometimes, actually not this evening, because I was in a good energy this evening, but sometimes when I come here, sometimes I'm really busy, or sometimes even sick, and say, "Oh, I don't want to give a talk tonight." Why do I always have to give a talk on Friday night? Because we may think that, you know, you've got a choice. You can come here, you don't come here. As for me, I'm stuck. And then, it doesn't matter. You feel like it, you don't feel like it. You just do it and make peace with it. I don't argue with it. And when you make peace with things and you make fun with things, it doesn't really matter. And then you can always have a good time giving talks. And whatever you have to do in life. Of course, I'd love to be able just to sit in my monastery. I've got a beautiful cave, which is really cool. You know, because it's beautifully built and nighttime temperature, daytime temperature, maybe half a degree. Even today, 22 degrees inside my cave, even though it's about 40 outside. It's about just about 3 o'clock before we left, 2:30, 2:45. No air conditioner. It's just natural. It's a beautiful thing. I don't want to come out to the heat. I want to stay in my cave. But no, look, you make peace with your lifestyle. So you make peace with what you have to do in life. So making peace doesn't mean you get your own way. Yeah, you just make fun with what you have to do in life. So this is my job. I have to work giving talks, arranging things, talking, counting to things. So instead of like complaining about it, I just make peace with it and enjoy it. The same with you. To get peace of mind does not mean that you do what you want to do. Let's never find peace of mind that way. You find peace of mind by making peace with whatever is you're called upon to do in life, whatever happens in life. So whatever your role, your job in life happens to be, you can always, like I have to do, like I do, make fun with it, enjoy it, put happiness into it, make peace with it. And you can make peace with anything. You can have fun with anything. Wonderful, wonderful things to actually go to some of these places and have fun. I remember the autopsies I've been to. I used to have great fun in autopsies. I remember this because I saw in the newspaper today there was a picture of this Professor Hilton. I think he was a pathologist in Perth. He's retired now, but something to do with some case of a dead baby many years ago. But some years ago, the monks were actually allowed to go in to see an autopsy, and he was the guy doing the autopsies. And as soon as they opened up the stomach, there was all these, what's it called, mixed vegetables, like peas and carrots inside this. And he said, that's amazing. He was a Scots fellow, this Hilton fellow. And he said, it's really amazing. Just like Saturday night on the buses in Glasgow, that's what actually you see on the floor. You get the idea that people vomiting, because in Glasgow, rough town, people drink too much. And what would actually come out of their stomach was actually mixed vegetables. And they said, so, see, even in Perth, mixed vegetables in this lady's stomach. So they have a great sense of humour. Why not? Even in an autopsy, you can have fun. So in many, many different places of life, you can enjoy yourself. You can make peace and have fun anywhere. What a wonderful thing that is to know. If you can start to do that, you can understand it doesn't have to be perfect. You don't have to have it this way and that way before you can make peace in life and have peace of mind. Peace of mind is not found in some deep cave, in some perfect monastery, in some wonderful place high in the Himalaya mountains. If you're looking for peace that way, you're looking for what Ajahn Chah says, the turtle or the tortoise with a mustache. That's not how you find peace of mind. Peace of mind you find just in, that's one of his great sayings, finding the tortoise with a mustache. People have been looking for that for years and never found it because it doesn't exist. That type of peace of mind, no way can you find. But the peace of mind just in this life you have now, halfway down the well, in great tragedy, great difficulty. Yes, you can find peace of mind. What a wonderful thing that is to know. So, doesn't matter what's happening in your life, there is honey dripping. Peace of mind. You find it right now. How do you find it? Letting go of all the past. Forgiving and letting go of all the guilt. Not worrying about the future. It's completely uncertain. It's a great mystery. It's an adventure, this thing called life. We never know what's around the corner. And also, just learning just to appreciate this moment. Doing your duty. Putting fun into whatever you have to do. And you can do that. No matter what it happens to be. You can find peace of mind anywhere. It's as free as the air. That's why no one can sell it. Why we don't charge when you come in to Dhammaloka Buddhist Center in Olamara. No more than you can sell the air. Peace of mind is here for you. So please drink it, enjoy it, keep it, and know it's always there whenever you want to have another taste of the honey that is peace of mind. Thank you for listening. Okay, so that's the talk on peace of mind. Does anyone want to say anything? Any comments? Yes.
If you can't find the peace of mind just in a monastery, why are you a monk?
Why a monk? Why not? Something to do. Now, first of all, people go to monasteries looking for peace of mind. It's a wonderful way of actually getting really deep pieces of mind, especially in meditation. But the teaching this evening is the peace of mind is found within you wherever you happen to be. Because a lot of times I started like looking for the perfect monastery. You look at this monastery, that monastery, and you can never find a perfect monastery. So then I decided to go and build my own monastery. And it's still not perfect. It's good enough. There's a question over there. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Peace of mind is real happiness. There are many other happinesses in life, you know, such as, you know, your footy team wins the grand final, you fall in love, you know, you get your first house or whatever, many other happiness in life. But when you really understand what the true happiness is, what you really seek for, is that inner contentment, that peace of mind. That's the true happiness. So sometimes all the other happinesses, you know, you get the house, you know, you get a nice partner because you think that's going to give you peace of mind. You're going to be able to live happily ever after and get contentment. But it's the peace of mind which is the ultimate happiness. Any other questions? Okay. So we can finish off this evening. So I can have a bit of peace of mouth.